Okay, so. In Mantra 8, at the request of the Acharyas, the Lord descends in his deity form, which is non-different from his original spiritual form. Unfortunately, the materialist and the materialistic devotees, Kanishta Adhikaris, cannot accommodate the fact that the Lord can be transcendental and immanent at the same time. According to the HarperCollins Dictionary of Philosophy, page 120, the philosophy of theism, in most interpretations, is God is partly immanent in the universe and partly transcendent. In essence, this definition is the Vedic philosophy of the Supreme Person, as stated in Purusha Shukta, Rig Veda 10.94. With three-fourths of himself, the Purusha ascended. The other fourth was born here. From here on all sides, he moved towards the living and non-living. End quote. Again and again in the Vedic literatures, we find references to Tripada Bhuti and Ekapada Vibhuti. Tripada Vibhuti, okay. The three-fourths of the Lord's splendor displayed as the spiritual world, and the one-fourth by which he pervades the material world. About the material manifestation, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 10.41, know that all these opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations are born from a part of my total splendor. Because they oppose theism, the theories of deism, monism, pantheism, and dualism are actually atheism. Deism separates God completely from his material creation. Monism renders God partless. Pantheism confines him to the material universe. And dualism divides creation against him, placing part of it in the hands of a rival. Even major religious traditions like Christianity are influenced by deism and dualism. The English natural theologian Robert Boyle, 1627 to 1691, expressed open contempt for theism as a doctrine of infidels. When he drew up his last will and testament, he bequeathed £50 per annum forever, or at least for a considerable number of years, in order to institute a series of lectures for proving the Christian religion against notorious infidels, namely atheists, theists, pagans, Jews, Mohammedans, monotheism and pantheism are synonyms for theism. And pantheism are synonyms for theism. Monotheism means belief in God, in one God. Okay, what is going on here? In the Vedic religion, there is only one God, though he empowers servants who act as demigods on his command. These demigods are worshipped as God only by foolish people. Pantheism teaches that all things are imbued with God's presence, because all things are in God. God is more than all there is. He is all-conscious and supreme unifying factor. Sahotra Swami, substance and shadow. Okay, so then, so here is theist, he's taken as the, because the monotheism here then is not actually fully, properly theistic. The difficulty is that we see is that the deism or the dualism then make it actually bring it to a improper understanding. Means all these different aspects, they're partially theistic. So therefore, when we deal with all these people, that's the aspect that we work with. Because it's from there that you can take it to the proper standard. But actual, true, fully, proper understanding of the Lord, then one has to understand the aspect that he is transcendental to everything, but at the same time, having created everything, he's still in control of that, and his energies still run that. So this balance then is, for most, is very difficult to understand because of what we were discussing before, is that if God is all good, then that means nothing bad can come from him. So that means all the bad of this world has to be managed by someone else. And so then that means then there's an independent actual creation than him. So this runs into problems. So all these kind of actually atheistic understandings, then all these things have to be removed. So most all schools of thought think in this way, right? If they consider themselves religious, if they're theistic, or they will have a plethora of gods and all that, then that's also a problem, right? Because there's still the supreme God. So some get the supreme God but don't understand the relationship to all the other devatas and other energies. Some see the energies, don't see him. Right, so there's this, until they are able to combine all this together, then only they'll actually understand how he's the eternal supreme person. Right? Otherwise, then they're not. Because you see, ultimately, even though they say he's a person, they ultimately, if you ask them what does he look like, they say he has no qualities in anything. So they're actually impersonalists. Right? So though they claim that they're theists, technically they're not, right? Like that. So then continuing, page 16. The Lord fulfills the desires of all living beings according to their qualification. Still, the qualification itself is not sufficient. Quote, a living being desires something, and the Lord supplies the object of that desire in proportion to one's qualification. If a man wants to be a high court judge, he must acquire not only the necessary qualifications, but also the consent of the authority who can award the title of high court judge. The qualifications in themselves are insufficient for one to occupy the post. It must be awarded by some superior authority. Similarly, the Lord awards enjoyment to living entities in proportion to their qualifications. The good qualifications in themselves are not sufficient to enable one to receive awards. The mercy of the Lord is also required. Okay, so means you have the qualification, but technically speaking, why does anyone deserve material facility? Right? Because they're going to be using it not in line with Krishna. Does that make sense? So technically, why is it that they would consider that they deserve it? So just that this whole process is there, it's the Lord's mercy. Right? So one may qualify, but still it's by the Lord's mercy that he sanctions it. Right? This probably gives the example as the high court judge. Then he may have the qualifications, but he still has to be sanctioned to actually be the judge. Right? Does that make sense? So still, even you qualify, you perform all kinds of nice activities in the material world. Still, it's by the Lord's mercy that it's still all happening. These things are important to keep in mind. We see that Yudhishthir Maharaj is mentioning when Arjuna comes back from Dwarka, that all of their material facility, everything that they have, is all because of Krishna's mercy. Right? One could say, you know, Yudhishthir is very pious, and therefore because of that, then he's got all this nice facility. But still, it's by the Lord's grace. Right? One, the Lord's grace that you can even perform the activity that will give you that. And then that the Lord then sanctions it and then arranges it. So it's not just that you qualify, right? Otherwise, why do we make this point? Right? This point is being brought out very strongly because otherwise then karma mimamsa, right? Which is the purva mimamsa, right? It means dealing with the Veda and the Brahmanas, right? Then oppose this point. Right? While the Uttar Mimamsa, the Upanishads, then they support this. Because Purva Mimamsa works on the principle, you do yajna, and because the ritual is there in the scripture, and it gives the result, right? It says, if you do this particular sacrifice, or this austerity, or this charity, you'll get this result. So because you've done the action, you must get the result. It's just mechanics, it's automatic. So it's not a matter of anybody's consideration. No, it's just a matter of you've done it, you deserve it. You know, you go into the store, you plunk the money down on the counter, you get the goods. But what they forget is that the shop owner doesn't have to sell it to you even if you bring the money. Right? They have to want to sell it to you. Right? So in the same way is that you may have the qualification, but still it's the Lord's mercy that it comes. Otherwise, we just say it's because of their doing that, then the underlying, it leaves the door open for karma mimamsa. Right? And since we're not working on the principle, of that you're performing anything for a fruit of result. The result's for Krishna. Therefore, this principle of action and reaction is not what we take as the driving point. It's the relationship between the living entity and the Lord. Otherwise, it can be brought to that. I've done this, why I'm not getting that? Right? I'm going to Mangalartik, I'm chanting my rounds, I'm doing everything nicely. How could this happen to me? Right? But then that brings this point out. Still, it's the Lord's sanction. And still, it's, even though one may seem to be qualified, there's, you know, other things at work. You know, do you actually deserve it? Will it actually be good for you if you get it? You know, what is Krishna's actual plan? Otherwise, we think, because I've done the sadhana, I deserve the result, rather than I'm doing this to please Krishna, the result's his. Because the result's his, I shouldn't be worried about a result in the first place, other than getting a good one for him. Right? Does that make sense? So these are subtle points, because you're dealing with Upanishads. So you want to make sure that there's nothing that happens that shouldn't be going on. Right? So it has to be very, very clear. So like that. So the Upanishads bringing this out. The word yata tayaha. Yata tatyata shows that the Lord rewards the living entity with the results of their desire without interfering with their free will. Therefore, one should be very careful about the quality of his desires, Srila Prabhupada comments. Ordinarily, the living being does not know what to ask from the Lord, nor which post to seek. When the living being comes to know his constitutional position, however, he asks to be accepted into the transcendental association of the Lord in order to render transcendental loving service unto him. Unfortunately, living beings under the influence of material nature ask for many other things, and they are described in the Bhagavad Gita 2:41 as having divided or splayed intelligence. Spiritual intelligence is one, but mundane intelligence is diverse. Sri Upanishad Mantra 8 Purport. Okay, so now, having established that it's not just the qualifications, because you've done the action and all that, now we see that also more important is your attitude. Right? Again, we come back to this principle of action and attitude, or action and motive, right? Action and qualities. It's like that, the qualities, that attitude, that's more important than the action itself. Right? Because the action itself gets a result, but that's, of course, if the Lord is pleased with it. But at the same time, is more important than that is knowing what is the mood. Because if the mood is right, then you know what to ask for. Right? So here, instead of asking for material facilities from the Lord, which you can get, you can do. That's going on anyway. It was going on before you took up Krishna consciousness. Right? So why won't it go on now? Right? Before recognizing Krishna, Krishna's providing your facilities. So why wouldn't he now as a devotee? But the point is now that you know who you are and what position you're naturally in, that should be what is aspired for. How to become, you know, an eternal associate of the Lord. Right? Not for our own satisfaction, but in that position, then we can render service nicely to the Lord. Does that make sense? Again, the splitting is that the action is there, but don't think because of that I'm getting everything I want. No, if the attitude is right, that then is what pleases the Lord. That's what makes things work better. Right? And so then, since the attitude is then to become a servant of the Lord, then whatever actually makes that work, that's what then we have to do. Does this make some sense? The Lord is the greatest of all, Padibhu, and the individual souls are dependent upon Him. Right? So then we know the relationship, we know the position that we're dependent, He's independent. So then whatever's the principle of the dependent, that's what we should be following. So Krishna, the dependent means that the independent creates the field of activities. Right? The dependent within that field, then whatever aspect that they're inclined towards or interested in, that becomes the central focus. Right? So now that means then that field is established by Krishna. And if we're interested in, as in previous points, building on that, then to be the Lord's associate, to be the Lord's servant, to render service to Him, that means that's that particular aspect of the field. Otherwise, the field's unlimited. Right? And so then we want to be able to see Krishna in a particular way. Depending upon that, that's how He will then reciprocate with us. Right? That's the principle. You want to see Him in a particular light, that's the light in which He will reveal Himself. So we have to be very clear that being the dependent, therefore, we have to be the one to make the decision. Not that we'll just sit here and the lightning bolt will hit us one day and then everything will be enlightened and all this kind of thing like that. You know, it sounds great, you know, it works nice in the movies, but in actuality, the reality is you as a person want to have to interact with God as a person. That's the bottom line. Does that make sense? So we have to take the initiative. He's already taken the initiative. He's created the field. And we're in that field. So now it's a matter of becoming interested to respond. Does that make sense? And then according to how we act, then Krishna will respond to that. Does that make sense? He purifies even most contaminated objects, and at the same time He remains absolutely pure. Right? The Lord, He can purify anything and everything, just like the sun can purify all contaminated places. So in the same way, the Lord can purify everything. So then it's a matter of connecting it to Him. So whatever state we're in, we start with that state, connect that to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Now one may say, okay, if it's connected, all that matters is connecting it to Krishna. So I've connected to Krishna, so everything's perfect. So that's nice, but that doesn't remain that way, right? Relationships always develop. So whatever condition I'm in, I connect that to Krishna, right? So then it becomes purified. But now, what is the quality of what you've connected? Right? Since what you connect is the medium through which you're going to serve the Lord. And so, depending upon how you're serving, that means what kind of results you get for the Lord. Right? And those results that you get, how are those then going to be connected to the Lord? So now, since you're performing an action that will give a result, what is the quality of that result? Of course, that is connected to Him, that makes it perfect. But the point is we're talking beyond perfection. Right? Perfection is liberation. Right? Then real perfection, beyond that is developing, cultivating that love. Right? So the point is what is the quality of what you're offering? Right? So today, this is what we have, this is what we're able to do, so that's what we offer. Right? But the idea is then, as one matures in Krishna consciousness, one starts to see that actually, I'm in a position I could render better than that. Right? So therefore, all the varieties of attachments and different things that are distractors from Krishna consciousness that we're connecting to Krishna and purifying in this way, then we could move beyond those. Or if they're considered something that's recommended, then we can move beyond that. Our impetus is for our own self. Right? That I'm inspired to do this because of what I want from it. But it's a matter of, I can serve Krishna and render that selfless service to Him, though I'm still using the medium that I was using before when my impetus was attachment. Does that make sense? Like maybe someone, like we say, someone's a cook. And so they're a cook because they like to eat. And they like to cook all kinds of nice things so they can sit down and taste all the different things. They like to call their friends, share it with them, you know, have them appreciate it and taste nice things. At the same time, appreciate his, you know, cooking. Oh, you're such a great cook. I've never tasted anything like this. All that kind of whole rasa is his impetus. So then he joins Krishna consciousness. So since it's an authorized area, then that continuance of using it is not a problem. It's not an area that must be phased out. Does that make sense? Like that. So then in that way, then it's just improving the quality of it. That he's doing it to please Krishna. Krishna likes to eat. It's a way that he can offer things to Krishna, but he's not doing it for his own taste, and he's not doing it for the praise of others. Right? Does that make sense? So, like that, one would distinguish is that you have both the activity itself and the quality of the activity. So, wherever one is, position one's at, one starts from there. That's where you start, right now. That you connect to Krishna. Right? Then you start to analyze with time the quality of what you're connecting. So if it's an inferior quality and there's an option for superior quality, why one wouldn't use the superior quality? Right? To use the old kind of half-dried up, you know, shrivelly cauliflower for the deity when there's a nice new one there and saying, oh, don't be fanatic. That's nice, but what about the Lord? Right? He could, in a sense, the result is for him. Why you wouldn't want to use better quality goods. So therefore, whatever it is that we are connecting, if it's not of superior quality, then we will try to bring it to a superior platform. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. Then, having brought whatever he is to the superior platform, then he tries to see that the quality of the mood, his quality of his motivation, his attitude, that is then brought to a better standard. Right? That can be done all along. So naturally, by doing that, by improving the quality of one's attitude, that will be your greatest inspiration to improve the quality, the external. Right? But if not, then we work on the, you know, we got to always deal with the best, so we're finding the best for Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? But the best is actually the attitude. And if the attitude is there, then you'll be looking naturally for the best. Does that make sense? So the difference between the best because of our false ego, I can only work with the best, right? You know. Then there's the best because actually the results for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
Some people are asked to put this on their face and they say, well, how much money have I got? They're dependent upon the facilities given from somebody else rather than going and discovering what's there.
How much money?
You want me to cook a feast, so what's the budget?
Okay.
For $150, then I can make a first class feast. You give me $20, then it's about $100.
Okay. So, I mean, you have that aspect because the person is, if they're in a position of dependency, then that's natural because you also want to know. You would want to know what is, how you say, what exactly is the nature of this feast. You know, if it's like, you know, how you say, salted watercress, then, you know, you can probably do a pretty good, you know, cheap budget, you know. But if you want to do something more, then it's more. But, I mean, I understand what point you're making is that the person could take the initiative and whatever it is, if he wants to cook something nice, then he arranges the facility and then is able to do more. That's what you're meaning. Yeah, so then that's there. If they have that ability. The main thing is according to your ability, then you will do it. So if you have some ability to organize and do that kind of a thing, then naturally you do it. So if the temple can give you $100, you need 150, then you'll arrange the $50. But if you can, then you'll cook for 100, you know, like that. Or cook one really great preparation, you know, like that. Everybody gets a spoon. Right?
You said once that we can connect through Bhagavad, Panchratrika, and Vedic, we can connect to Krishna through these three. What does it mean for me? Like, how can I connect the Panchratrika and the Vedic?
How do you connect the Panchratrika and the Vedic?
I'm not clear what activities are in the Panchratrika and also Vedic.
What activities are in the Panchratrika?
Yeah, and the Vedic also, how does it apply to me?
Well, I mean, there's the element that you need, one would study these things. That's the idea, is to learn. But Pancharatrik, we'll go through a short list, okay?
Okay.
And you see if you can relate to it, right? Okay. When you get up, when you wake up in the morning, first thing you do is chant Krishna's name, some form, right? Then, so that's the first rule of the Pancharatra. Second one is then you offer obeisances to the spiritual master. Third rule is then you fix your bed. Preferably, if you're a brahmachari, put it away. Like that, because otherwise there's this mystic power that beds have that can suck brahmacharis back into it. They're very powerful. Like that. So the bed is put away. Then third, you go you brush, you know, use the toilet, clean yourself, brush your teeth, clean your tongue, like that, take your bath. Then you put on, you know, get dressed, put tilak. Then you're wearing neck beads, you have your Brahmin thread, you know, you have your Sika. Then you chant Gayatri. Then after that, then, you know, clean the place where you stay and, you know, close anything like that that's got to be done. Go to the temple, ring the bell, chant the deity's name, offer obeisances, attend Mangal Arti. After Mangal Arti, then some, you know, chant, then there's chanting of Japa, there's the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, worship of the Guru, circumambulation of the deities, honoring prasad, the darshan artik, charinamrita, taking prasad, then some service that you're doing in the day for the Lord, you know, in some capacity, taking care of guests, worshipping Tulsi. What else? Some service to the Dham. So could you relate to any of that? Mm-hmm. Would you happen to be maybe doing that every day of your life? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's Pancharatra.
And why is it called Pancharatra? Because it's activity centered around deity worship?
No. When Krishna had originally spoken the Veda to Lord Brahma, right? And then having the Veda, then the demons Madhu and Kaitava, they came and stole the Veda from Brahma's mind. Right? Very powerful demons. So having lost the Veda, then Brahma went back to Krishna and said, "You please explain the Veda, but because life is short, one could die at any moment, right? Any moment within 311 trillion years. You please explain the essence to me first. Then having understood the essence, then re-explain the whole Veda." Right? So in five nights, then Krishna explained to him the essence of the Veda. So that's called Pancharatra. You understand? So in other words, you have the Vedic literatures, and in there they have so many philosophical, cultural points, ritual, all that. So all those verses from the Veda and all these Vedic literatures that deal directly with the Lord, right? Or those activities so you can deal directly with the Lord. That's Pancharatra. So Pancharatra is completely Vedic. It's just that it's only taking those things which are ekayana, which is directed at Vishnu, right? Because other aspects could be directed elsewhere, depending upon one's inclination. So cutting off all those, Pancharatra deals with those that actually just deals with Vishnu. Right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that lifestyle, then that is the preferred lifestyle of the conditioned living entity in the material world. Right? The best living lifestyle is that of the Bhagavat. Well, all you do is absorb yourself in hearing and chanting and associating with devotees, right? In the Dham, you know, worshipping the deity. That's all you do. But if one's conditioned, then one requires a little bit more regulation to keep the lifestyle pure. And so that's the Pancharatra. But as we see in there, it doesn't leave a whole lot of space for mundane desire other than, you know, some prasad, you know, and a few little things. Does that make sense? So if you need to deal with more than what is given in the Pancharatra, that's the Vedic. So the Vedic is how anything that you might be interested in can be connected to the Lord. You understand? And what is the hierarchy of those things that you're interested in? Right? Because so many things that you can connect, but there's something that's better than another. and that what is better or less is established by an authority, not by ourselves. You know what I'm saying? Because we could say, oh, I think this is better, but that doesn't matter. Krishna has his own opinion. Right? Like in the Gita, Krishna says, some say this, some say that, this, that, but in my opinion. So that's the one you take. Right? All those other ideas are seen in relationship to that opinion. Does that make sense? So that's the idea. When you know the essence from the Bhagavat and the Pancharatrik, then when you deal with the Vedic, you deal with it according to Krishna's opinion. So this idea, oh, there's so many things in the Veda. There's so many things in the material world. We're saying Yukta Vairagya. They've got slaughterhouses out there. So how are you going to use that in Krishna's service? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing is, one can come up with all kinds of nice, you know, seemingly intelligent arguments that actually have no substance. The point is the Vedas are how the material world works. Now, that's the whole material world. We couldn't deal with the whole material world anyway. We would have to pick an aspect. We wouldn't be able to deal with the whole thing. Right? Our conditioned nature wouldn't relate to it anyway. Our conditioned nature will only relate to a particular aspect of the whole material world. Right? Then within that, there is more pure states and less pure states of that conditioned nature. You know what I'm saying? Like someone, let's say, is very bold. That can be a very good quality. It can also be a very bad quality. Right? It depends on its purity. So then one has to understand is, okay, boldness is there, it is in this form now. So I connect that to Krishna, but then there's actually this better form of boldness. And so then it's gradually we start to take it up. So that's what the Vedas are for. They're not for something else, you know? Like Manu is not for cutting off fingers and hands. Manu is to establish your relationship with God. Right? And for those that are very stubborn and don't want to recognize the authority of God, then the only thing they maybe recognize is physical punishment. So they may have to go through that for their nonsense activities. Right? But the purpose of the whole thing is to elevate you to God consciousness. Right? So then, in this case, now this person who accepts no authority starts to understand, well, there seems to be an authority because I seem to be missing a finger now. And it wasn't my idea. Right? So that means someone else is in control. Someone else is an authority. You know what I'm saying? So there it starts to awaken this concept of higher principles in a very low-class person. Does that make sense? So that's the idea, is how to bring one near to the Lord, like that. That's the whole purpose of it. So if one is already moving in that direction, near to the Lord, then these other more harsh things aren't required at all. You know what I'm saying? Because then it's a matter of education, it's a matter of practice and sadhana, it's a matter of association. Right? It's a matter of being, you know, how you say, being analytical and understanding one's position. Right? So that's all what's there. So those aspects of the Shastra is what we take. The other aspects are not for us anyway. Right? Does that make sense? You go into a store, a medicine store, it's got medicines for every disease. But which one do you need? All of them? No, the one that matches your disease. Right? Does that make sense? So, according to our disease and according to the direction of the acharyas, then we take up the process. Does that make sense? So, if what you see in Srila Prabhupada's books, that's giving, basically, what you need from the Vedic and the Pancharatrik and the Bhagavad. It's already given there. And then any further detail, if there's some specific detail, some technical detail, some mechanical aspects, then he tells you which literatures to find them in, if it's important to you. Does that make sense? You know, if medicine's important to you, he says the books. You know, if Dharma is important to you, he says the books. You know what I'm saying? So it's there. He says Manu and Parasara and Yajnavalkya. So we don't have to bother with the other, you know, 17 Dharma Shastras. You know, what they say, then that matches what we're saying. Right? And Prabhupada's already given. Some of the quotes that he gives are direct quotes out of these books. That we're very familiar. So it's just a matter of being aware of what's going on, rather than not being aware. You know, in other words, within philosophy that we can distinguish what is, you know, what on what, dealing with the transcendence, dealing with the metaphysical, dealing with the physical, dealing with the emotional, dealing with the intellectual. You know, what is actually being discussed? Then seeing that, then we can start to actually put our life together. Is that okay? Yeah. Something else. Yes.
In CC, Prabhupada talks about the importance of chanting with our tongue and our teeth and our jaws. And you're speaking about mood. So that's really what attracts Krishna, is the mood of the chanting. And yet we're advised to pay attention to the externals too.
Mm-hmm.
So could you speak a little bit about how those externals, they must follow the mood?
Mm-hmm. Well, the natural thing is externals do follow the mood. Problem is when you don't have a mood, you start with externals. You know, that's the thing, is that... you come to the temple, you don't know what to do for Krishna, so therefore you're given pots to wash, because then there's a form. Then from washing pots for 6 months, you're purified and you get familiar with what other activities go on in the temple. Then there's an interest in what's happening. You know what I'm saying? So the gross always follows the subtle. But the problem is if there is no subtle, then you start with gross. Because from gross, you can invoke the subtle. Right? So the gross, it means the form of it is important, because without the form, how is anything expressed? But at the same time, is more important than the form is the mood in which it's done. So it's just like, you know, the form is very important, and the attitude's more important than that. But if the attitude's not there, then you start with the form, and by trying to perfect the form, then purification is going on. Action is there, because only through action can anything happen. Purification is only going to happen through action. So if we just start with mood until the mood's right, then we won't do. Then nothing will happen, because there's no action in mood. Right? Mood is applied to action. Krishna's 64 qualities are applied to action. Right? And from them is generated action. He has 64 qualities. From being inspired by that, right, that's the vibhav, then there will be anubhav, there'll be an action. And then the taste that is gained from that action, the rasa that's gained from that action. Right? So they go together, they're synonymous. But in that, because you can perform an action just by habit without even thinking about it, therefore then once the action is in place, then thinking about it becomes prominent. You know what I'm saying? So the devotees go for it. So what you can see is that you need form, because otherwise if there's no form, you just talk about attitude, then nothing will happen, right? And Krishna Prabhupada already came to America and bumped into a whole community of such persons who were just into the mood, right? And didn't do anything, right? So he had to get them to be active and do something. Then, once they're active, then they have that form. You see, they follow the Vaishnava lifestyle, they can chant easily, not without problem, the temple program comes very easily, the principles come fine, you know, they're able to understand philosophy, this, that, and so on. So now the form's in place. So now the next step is then refine the quality of that, right? Prabhupada said, boil the milk, right? So if you don't do that, then what are you going to do with this? Because otherwise, then, because it's a sadhana, it's something repeated, it gets boring. Right? And then from getting boring, then what happened to all those devotees that were so expert and fixed in their sadhana? Right? Like that. So, does that make sense? So that's the idea, is that then you go into that, then you have a whole lifetime of engagement. Because the quality in which you can chant your rounds, or attend Mangal Artik, or associate with devotees, or can always improve, you know, the quality. So that will keep one busy. And if that is done, then that development, that internal development, once one intelligence is working, one's own personal development is there, one tends to not find fault in others because one's busy, you know, with one's own qualities. Otherwise, then the other thing is, because you have to work with development, then the next thing is, then they'll turn it on devotees. Right? Because you've already had in yourself, just to develop the form, you've had to be analytical of yourself or critical of yourself. You didn't do it right. You know, you wash the pot, there's still some burnt spatch there, you know, or this or that, or some soap is still there. You know, so you get it where that's there. But once that happens, if now you don't turn it on the quality of it, then what will happen is you'll turn that on other devotees. And that goes for a while, nice, you can cover it up saying it's management, it's all this and that, but at some point it goes beyond that. And then, you know, it ends up that, you know, then the next group is doing all these activities. So it's like the Gundicha Marjan, is that you have the first cleaning, which is the gross cleaning. Right? Then after that's done, then they go back and with the fine get all the cracks and all the dust and all the this and that. So Prabhupada says, you know, first one is like just physically getting yourself situated properly in a Krishna conscious environment, throwing out all the stuff that's useless. Then the next one is actually developing the mind, purifying the mind and heart. Like that. Is that okay?
It's interesting how, yeah, it's just as you said, the form allows us to give us access, the possibility of tasting the mood. And then when the mood is good, then that energizes the externals follow.
They nourish you. That's why he said, you have tadvini paripantena paripashnena sevaya. Right? By service, you get inspired to know. If you're inspired to know, then you hear and you inquire. Right? Once you've inquired, then with your intelligence, you're going to apply that again as seva. And that seva will generate deeper wanting to know. So it's a cycle. You know? Like that, each nourishes each other. So the mood, if you have the right mood, you'll want to do something. Right? If you're doing something nicely, if it's properly, that then gives a nice form for that mood to manifest. You know, it's just like, what's more important, lunch or Mother Yashoda's mood of love for Krishna? Right? So the point is, but how is she going to express that love if there's not lunch? That's the whole point is, the mood needs the form, right? Just like the form needs the mood, right? And even we bring this into the social, is each one needs the other. The Brahmins need the Kshatriyas, right? Because they have the mood, but the Kshatriyas do the work. But the work is only good with the mood. Does that make sense? So any kind of relationship, that each one nourishes the other. Each one is dependent upon the other for rasa. Does one become prominent? Basically, Prabhupada is describing is that when the focus is on the activity, trying to perfect the activity, do the activity nicely, then that's called karma yoga. And when the focus is more on the attitude, the mood, and the technicalities that go there in how the metaphysics of the mind and intelligence works, that's jnana yoga. Because when you get to attitude, then there's no then the desire goes down. Because you improve the attitude means you have to improve the quality of the work means it can't be fruitive. So automatically, any karma that's done without desire for result becomes jnana. So then the importance is if that's connected to Krishna, that's useful for the the impersonalists and that, they follow the same process. They get rid of the desire for action through performing their proper varnashram duties. It frees them from material contamination. But that's useless. That hardens the heart. So in here, as long as that you keep that balance, that it's to please Krishna. That's why at some point it hardens me. So the technique is that if you leave it at jnana, it will harden the heart and it will actually become detrimental for devotional service, even though you're doing it through devotional service. Right? Because the devotee's heart is soft. That's why then the element of spontaneity must arise, because that's what softens it. So because what happens at that time is it's not the performance of the rule or the technique, it's the pleasure of Krishna. Because one is already good at what one's doing. One can do it nicely. So one is improved. So it's natural that the form's going to be prominent. Then the mood, which will detach one from the work and the result. But then it has to, the element of doing it to please Krishna, that has to become now the prominence. Then that's what's called rag. Right? Then it becomes very nice. Then the heart softens again. Then you're able to give that, engage others in the elements of karma and jnana, in a very pleasant way. Otherwise, they both tend to be a little harsh. You're wrong, you've done it wrong, or your attitude is wrong, like that. So these kind of things, that when it comes to there, then it becomes soft and one can give that. Does that make sense? Then it becomes very nice. So that's why it means, at any stage you're at, you can give whatever you have to someone else. But it becomes much nicer if you're not in any, naturally a nice person. It will come anyway, it will become nice if that increase of that attraction and attachment to Krishna comes out. Is that okay? No, it's on the time. Continue on Monday.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.
Please, go. And remind me,